Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, as we continue, it is Wake Up Call. Here it is, the good, the bad, and the dumb that gets you started for the week. And a weekend that didn't have good for the Daytona 500 and maybe not good for the NBA All-Star Game, but what was the good of the day?
The good of the day, Tony. You know what? College baseball has been growing over the
really has.
I feel like it's really been growing over the last couple of years. And so college baseball started up again over this past weekend. But I wanted to highlight two stories that I found, you know, kind of remarkable and funny at the same time. The first one was a East Carolina sophomore named Parker Byrd. He is the first player in Division I history to play with a prosthetic leg.
I saw that. That was pretty awesome. A lot of people were retweeting that video of him going to the plate.
Yeah. He came in as a pinch hitter, ended up drawing a walk. So his on-base percentage is 1,000 right now. So good on him.
Good for him.
But yeah, I mean, it's...
That's a very cool story.
I was thinking about that. I was like, okay, well, you know, running's not a problem. But I mean, it's his right leg. And he's a right-handed batter. Just to pivot off that must be, I mean, I don't know how you do it.
Yeah.
To really connect. And so, and you know, and I know, I'm hoping it wasn't one of those things like, oh, let's put him in and get the publicity. You know, I'm thinking he earned his way.
Yeah, I would hope so, especially at the collegiate level on East Carolina's level.
Yeah, I mean, they're number 11 ranked team in the nation?
Yeah, that they did not do that.
They don't need gimmicks.
They don't need gimmicks. So, and what's the second good from college baseball?
The second good from college baseball, I have to give it to Sac State's Matt. God, I'm going to butcher this last name. Mastriangelo?
I'm going to take your word for it.
Yeah, his first day of baseball with Sac State, first game out of season, was a doubleheader. Sac State was playing against, I think, Weber State. And he got hit by the ball 7 times.
He was hit 7 times?
7 times. He got hit 3 times in the first game, the 4 times in the second game. To make things even better, he was pinch hit for towards the tail end of that doubleheader, and that batter got hit.
How?
It's a cursed spot, I'm telling you.
Is he, okay, is he, you know, that's amazing.
7 times.
Some people won't get hit 7 times in a year.
Yeah. He wrapped them all up in one game. I mean, I don't know if there's just some wild pitching going on. I think it's, I want to say Weber State. Who cares?
I've always had this question where I know they practice indoors, but. Like some of these, there's not like a spring training complex to go, you know what I mean? Like for these baseball teams, you know, so they go down to Florida or they go on the road and they warm up. But when you are like, you would want some games under your belt, right? To get some kinks worked out before you start the season. College baseball doesn't really do that. They just kind of open up the season. So you're going to get, like, we don't watch every single spring training game to see like, hey, a guy pitched one inning and he did this and that. But in, college baseball, they're like, yep, if it's kind of chilly, we're inside, and then we go outside and play. And, yeah, hopefully everybody's all loosened up and ready to play baseball. We're going to jump right into it. So maybe it's not – seems like 7 hit batters, a same batter would be crazy, but maybe it's – you know, maybe pitchers need more time since they don't get a real chance to report someplace warm. I don't know.
Okay,
just
maybe.
An excuse. So, all right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day I'm going to give it to an archaic rule that I think needs to be done. And you might debate me and say, no, that's the rules are rules and you must follow. But the fact that Jordan Spieth was disqualified from the Genesis Invitational because he signed an incorrect scorecard.
Yeah, this has been a really hotly debated thing this
weekend. It really bothers me that, you know, he miscalculated, didn't carry the one here or there or something like that. It's like, oh, no, you're out of the entire tournament now.
Nope. So for those who don't know, so what happens at a tournament is that your playing partner gets your scorecard and you get their scorecard. So they'll hand you scorecards on the first tee and your job is to write down the score of your opponent. So whoever Jordan Spieth was playing against, right, that day, well, not playing against, well, I mean, yeah, technically playing with.
Yeah.
He wrote down a 3 when Spieth made a 4. Now it's Spieth's job to check his score at the end to then determine if it was accurately reported on each score. I've always asked the question, why are we doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you still have to do this?
Keep the players honest.
But here's the thing. When I played in amateur events when I was younger, that's how you kept score for the tournament, because there's no other way to keep score for the tournament. That, like, you'd have these amateur events and I would play in them, and then that was it. Like, you had to kind of make, like, no one was following you, making sure everything was correct. Everything was on your, you would, so I didn't put my own score down. Somebody was putting my score down because they had to keep me in check, right? And then at the end, if there was a dispute, you sat down with your playing partner and said, remember, I hit this, this, and this. And they go, oh, maybe I put that down wrong. So that's how you would go to these, like, little amateur events, like, you know, a qualifying for, like, the New Hampshire amateur that I used to play in. That's how you'd keep score. But on the PGA Tour level, that's, you don't need that. You don't need that system. That system doesn't need to exist. That doesn't need to exist. It's similar, like, if I'm playing in college or high school, I don't have a replay in football, right? So I just have to, you know, whatever the referee says is whatever the referee says. But as I get higher in my playing, I get to a point in the NFL where we have replay to figure it out because we have the technology. On the PGA Tour, the fact that that's how these scores are official, that's silly to me.
Yeah.
That's silly.
Well, and how many times do you think these golfers really double-check their scorecard? You know, they're with them. I think they would assume the guy standing next to him was accurate.
Well, I'm going to guess every one of them, because the penalty is so severe.
Yeah, but how many times do they just kind of glance over and go, oh, maybe I did get a three there?
I'm
misremembering. I don't know.
Well, I'm going to say I don't know how many times in the tent somebody's went, yeah, hey, that's a wrong score. But you're right. I mean, you're talking about, it's not like a person is adding up, all right, you went out of bounds twice and then you hit it twice in the bunker and then you four putted. Like, it's basically fives, threes, twos, one, you know what I mean? Like, what, not ones, but, you know, it's basically low numbers, right? And then there's a person that's carrying a stick around with the current score on the board.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's the way it is. And look,
Or you can go to the big gigantic leaderboard and just, you know, I mean, if you missed one, look up there and go, oh, okay, he did get a three. All right, I thought
exactly. Like, you know, when I play golf, I shoot in the 80s. I shoot in like 82. 80. Like, to me, I don't even keep a scorecard. I just know in my head, like, all right, that was a double bogey to plus two. And if you're a pro golfer, you know exactly what you shot. You don't even need to look at your scorecard. So if you know you shot a 68. And they give you a 67, you don't sign that scorecard. Right? I mean, again, it's not like adding up 100. You know what I mean? Like, when, you know, like I, my buddies and I, we play one guy. We have one guy in the group. Like, I'll shoot like 86 or something. One of the guy shoots in the 90s. We have one buddy. He's fast, but he shoots like 110. That's the guy we're adding up at the end. Like, it was 7 plus 5, carry the 1. All right. That's the guy we're adding up at the end.
Is he thinking if the faster he goes, the less you'll see?
He is one of the fastest 100-plus golf shooters. Like, no practice swing, no thought. We've even actually told him, like, you might actually be better if you, like, just concentrated a little bit. He's like, nah, why bother?
Now, have you ever fibbed on a hole, a scorecard, or a score for yourself? Everyone has, right?
Oh, yeah, like in regular play, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I think I got a five.
I remember we all did, like, hey, you know, whoever has the worst round or worst hole for just one singular hole had to buy dinner. And I was broke. And I was like, there's no way I'm buying dinner for these
right.
animals.
Try to fluff it up a little bit. But, yeah, with Spieth, like, this, the system that they're using is not necessary for the PGA Tour. Again, if you're playing in the Mississippi Amateur, they don't have people with every group keeping score. You need a ton of volunteers for that. So you do it in a way that is somewhat honest. Like, you're not keeping your own score. You're keeping somebody else's. First time I played in one of those things, I didn't know that. I was like 17. And the first time I played in one of those, they gave me the scorecard. And I thought that was for my score. I didn't know what the rule was. So at the end of the day, the guy was like, all right, we're training scorecards. And he goes, this isn't, I go, oh, was I supposed to keep your score? He was like, yeah. And so he had to fill in. his entire score, and I had to sign it. I'm like, I don't know what he shot. But they were only taking the only two players advanced out of that to like the pub links, and I wasn't one of them, and he wasn't one of them, so we didn't care.
You're gonna give him a couple twos here, maybe.
Yeah,
three.
Yeah, whatever. I was like, yeah. I would go. I swear to God, man, it was so fun because I would get. It was always my friend and I would sign up for these amateur tournaments. We weren't great, but we would sign up for these amateur tournaments, and it was always funny because we would shoot like 84 or something, and then the winner would advance, shot like 5 under. And we'd be like, why do we even go to these things? And my friend always said, because, man, it's fun and it's a chance to play golf courses we would never, ever, ever get to play. And I was like, you know what? You're absolutely right. Yeah, it's so true. Country clubs that would never let us on. Yeah, it's one chance to play these country clubs.
Literally, my favorite
hack around.
My favorite thing about golf is that you get to walk around in a park for 3 hours.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So as long as we had the we could qualify, we always tried to sign up for them. But no, it's an arcane thing.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, rolling along, continuing with the good, the bad, and the dumb. All right, let's go with the dumb of the day.
The dumb of the day. I hate to do this, Tony.
Yeah.
I really hate doing this, you know, bringing us here on a Monday. But I think it's high time we all admit Tiger Woods' career is over.
I think it's completely over, yes.
You know, and I think it's dumb of us to think that there's ever going to be a comeback ever again. Because for, I don't know, the 50th straight tournament, it feels like, he bowed out early.
Yeah,
this time, dizziness, fatigue, flu-like symptoms, I don't know. Yeah,
it's just something.
It's always something.
Yeah.
And it's getting to that point of ridiculous. You know, I don't even know what to think. I mean, I wonder what the betting line will be next time where, you know, will he finish the tournament?
We talked about this last week and leading up to it when we had Ryan Ballingy on to sort of talk about golf and Tiger. And you know, I said, look, I know Father Time will come in and you will change your opinion about things. When Tiger was younger, and I don't mean younger like 24, I mean like 37, he said he didn't want to be a ceremonial golfer. Mm-hmm. He said, I don't want to be playing in tournaments that I can't win, right? But I think when he got older, he started realizing there was value to that, that wasn't the way you had to look through it in a different lens. It wasn't playing to win. It was playing to be seen, right? Like knowing your place in golf. People didn't watch Jack Nicklaus in his older age at the Masters because they thought he would win the Masters. It was just cool to see Jack Nicklaus playing golf.
Yeah.
Arnold Palmer playing golf, right? Those guys in the Masters that get lifetime exemptions, people love seeing them out there. Right, it's a reminder of a time when they did dominate the game. It was a reminder of a time in which they were, maybe for some of the people watching, one of the most important athletic figures in their lives, maybe, whatever it is. And there's been nobody as unique as Tiger Woods in sports because I think that there has been a growth of the game with Arnold Palmer because he was kind of an everyman. I think there was a level of appreciation for the game when Jack Nicklaus was dominating it. But I don't think anybody really made the kind of cultural impact that Tiger Woods made playing his sport. Now, you can go through all the other sports and say Wayne Gretzky was the best at hockey or Michael Jordan was great in the NBA and whatever
and
Major League Baseball, they are. But I don't, you know, no, not one of those guys made people want to do something that they never did or would have considered before Tiger Woods played golf.
Or just the fact that, you know, I go back to what you said, culturally impact.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Tiger being, you know, half black, half Asian in a game that was dominated by white people.
Sure.
Brought it to a whole different level. All around the world. You know, I don't even know if, you know, golfers were really, you know, I mean, I know there were golfers around the world, but they never really thought that they could be it.
It was when I remember watching the Tiger Woods documentary on HBO and they talked about his early life as a high school student, right? And he met this girl in high school and they were dating and she's actually in the documentary. And she goes, I go to his house and there's trophies and magazine articles and all these things that are framed all over his house. She had zero idea that he played golf, that he played good enough golf to be nationally known. Now, I asked the question, imagine if she went to high school with a kid that was on every college football magazine cover.
Yeah.
As a high school student. Which imagine if she was dating a kid who
Arch
was
Manning.
On Arch Manning or anybody else, or if she was dating a kid in high school that was a five-star college prospect and blowing away everybody in AAU. She'd probably know that. Right? But at the time that Tiger was dominating golf, golf wasn't even on. It was not. I played high school golf. It was clearly the uncool sport. Clearly the uncool sport. My buddy and I joke about it all the time. We joke about it all the time. We played high school golf. My friend actually won the New Hampshire high school championship. No one cared a lick that he did this. No one knew about it outside of a blurb in our yearbook. No one cared that he was the state champion. We joke about it. We joked about it for years before we kind of parted ways and went our separate ways. Tiger changed that. He made golf very cool. Very cool. And he made people want to do it. He made athletes in other sports want to do it. Right? And I think there was a feeling for him like, okay, I'm starting to understand who exactly I am. Because when he was 30, and I said this last week, I'll say it again. When he was 30, 31, 32, 33, whatever, he wasn't playing alongside a kid that said, I grew up watching you, and now I'm here because of you. But when you get to be 40, 42, 43, that was starting to come around, right?
He was now 48, definitely.
Definitely. Now he's, you know, I watched a video of him and Scottie Scheffler, right? And they were playing and Tiger was talking to Scottie Scheffler, and he was like, what kind of club would you use for a sand shot like this? It was like an instructional video between these two. And Scottie goes, I'd use my 60. He goes, I think I have versatility in getting it out of the sand. And then he goes to Tiger and he goes, what would you use? And Tiger goes, I still use a 56. I grew up at a time where the 60 wasn't really honed in. So I just learned to make all my shots with the 56 sand wedge. So I still use that. You can tell the difference between the two older. But then Scotty hits his bunker shot and he hits it like to 2 feet. And Tiger goes, that's why you're the defending Masters champion. And this was obviously before John Rahm. And then Scheffler goes, how many did you win? And Tiger goes, yeah, a couple. And Scheffler then kind of goes into a thing about how he loved watching him as a kid win those Masters.
Yeah.
Like, then you realize, okay, now I've got some level of importance in this. Like, I'm doing an instructional video with the current Masters champion. I'm a five-time Masters champion, but he's a Masters champion because I am a Masters champion, right? That's the level he's now at. Right, where he's going to these dinners with people who are saying, if it wasn't for you, I would have done something else. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have had an interest in this sport. Yeah, and because of you, I developed skills to be at where I am right now.
Yeah, I have no idea about, you know, maybe Rory McIlroy would have stuck to soccer, or, you know,
yeah.
Jordan Spieth would have stuck to baseball, you know, because they were good. But I mean, yeah, like you said, Tiger Woods made golf like, oh, you know what? It's not a dork sport.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, I remember in high school, I think we had a golf team.
And sure.
My high school was like, okay, fine, you can put our logo on your shirt. Like, I don't even think it was a sanctioned sport in
high
school.
In my school, literally ignored. I mean, ignored. In fact, I met a classmate in Vegas for the Super Bowl, and she's like, didn't you play on the golf team? I'm like, I practiced every morning outside the parking lot. I used to get to school half an hour before. I used to hit balls into a big field and walk them off and try to get my yardage by taking steps because you didn't have the yardage thing. That was my Uncle Tommy. My uncle was a pro. And my Uncle Tommy goes, well, hit like pitching wedges. Don't count the ones that are scattered. Count the ones that are close and walk out to that. And you get it and take your steps and then count your steps. And that's about your yardage. That's how I used to do that in the mornings on beautiful mornings. I was like, I just used to drive in and say, hi, you totally forgot. But that's because it wasn't a big deal. But I guarantee you, she knows that we won the softball championship because we had a big party for them, a big parade for them.
Yep.
But my friend who won the state championship, not a word, not a mention, not even a ceremony to honor. He won the state title.
Did he get a little blurb in the school newspaper?
I think maybe he did, but I know he got in the regular paper.
Yeah, because no,
it was, you know,
that doesn't count.
But again, Tiger changes the sport. He changes the perception of the sport. But I think you're right. he's not going to. This accident, I'm not a medical doctor. I don't know what the long-term ramifications of what that accident were, but I do know when you reach a certain age, you hear this all the time. Yeah, I don't walk as well as I used to. I don't run as well as I used to. I was in a car accident 7 years ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, in this latest one, it just feels like he fished for an excuse. It's like, I would like to confirm that I have influenza. I'm feeling better now. And it's like, but Tiger, it's always something. What's the next one?
I think he can't get around like he can. I think it hurts to walk around that golf course. I think he's trying really, really hard to maybe one day it's pain-free, but I don't think it's ever going to be pain-free.
You know.
But the good news for him, there's a Champions Tour that allows carts.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, in all honesty, though, do we even think he can win another tournament?
No.
No, no. Just a flat-out no.
I think Hideki Matsuyama shot 62 Sunday. They finished at 17 under par. I mean, that guy's...
He was six back?
Yeah, six back. Tiger needs to be able, at 48, 49, 50 years old. I mean, again, Phil did it, but Phil never had... Phil was plumpy and fun. He never had any car accidents, knee replacements, hip replacements, back surgeries.
And that win he had was all coffee.
Right? On the wellness of coffee. Seriously. I mean, and even now at 53, he's a non-relevant factor on live.
Yeah.
He had 1 week of awesomeness, and that was pretty much it. He did come in second at the Masters. But I don't think Tiger's going to... He's got a million things wrong with him. He's like the Bionic Man now without the superpower.
So it's time we realize it.
Yeah. All right, we'll continue. Let's wake up calling Sports Map Radio.